I think that there has been a real fascination with Bonhoeffer over the years. And my book came out just about a year and a half ago. It was the 65th anniversary of the death of Bonhoeffer at the hands of the Nazis. And it's a story that it's undeniably compelling, because here's a man who, because of his faith in Jesus, stands up for the Jews of Europe, stands up against Hitler. Here's a pastor who gets involved in the plot to assassinate Hitler. I mean, it's just – there's so much to this man, and I think he is undeniably authentic. That's one of the things I think that makes him so compelling, is that you – he's not easy to figure out. He's not easy to pigeonhole. And in a way, I think people want to know, how is it possible to live a life like he did amidst such evil? The Nazis, of course, are known to be sort of the definition of evil in modern history. And here's a man who was really a profound person of faith, living at a time when clearly that was it was not easy to do.
There have been other biographies of Bonhoeffer.
There have been. The most notable, of course, is the great biography by Bonhoeffer's best friend, Eberhard Bethge. That's really almost like a reference work. And it's one of the reasons I wrote my book. I thought many of my friends, when they hear the basics about Bonhoeffer, they're very, very interested. But there wasn't a more popular level biography. The Bethge book is in some ways tough to read unless you're very interested and are willing to wade through hundreds of pages of sort of the church history of that era, and it very complicated, some of it. And so I thought I need to write a short, breezy 600-page book, which is really all I set out to do. But I sort of hope that folks will read my book and then want to read the Bethge book, and then even more importantly, after they read my book, will want to read Bonhoeffer himself, because he has so much to offer us. And I hope that my book humanizes him and sort of whets the appetite for folks to want to go deeper and read maybe The Cost of Discipleship.
Most of us who have some awareness of the history of World War II or awareness of world events have heard of Bonhoeffer and know a little bit about the fact that he was a Christian leader, a pastor who was essentially killed by the Nazis.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit of the story. If you can give us the thumbnail sketch of Bonhoeffer's life.
Well, Bonhoeffer grew up into what can only be described as an absolutely amazing family. I mean, most of what ends up being in my book was a surprise to me. I went into this fairly ignorant. I knew the basics of his life, but I was astounded by his family. His father was the most famous psychiatrist in Germany for the first half of the 20th century. He comes from just a spectacular family. At age 14, he knows that he wants to be a theologian, and he meant mainly to be an academic theologian. He wanted to be an academic superstar at Berlin University, and that he did. He got his doctorate at age 21, and then he decided he wanted to be also ordained as a Lutheran minister, which is remarkable because he was so brilliant and so feted as a theologian in the academic sphere. For him to also want to be ordained as a minister, to preach sermons, to teach young children the meaning of the Christian faith, to counsel parishioners, he really wanted to do both. And he ends up going to New York in 1930 just to spend a year there. And he has an experience in the African-American church, Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem, which really somehow changed him. His friends felt that this changed him, and that when he went back to Germany, he was in some ways more serious about his faith. It wasn't just an academic thing. He really felt a compulsion to serve God with his whole life. And this led him to be involved in the resistance to Hitler and the Nazis. First of all, he did it in the church. In other words, the German church was being taken over by the Nazis, and Bonhoeffer was one of the leading voices against that, trying to get the church to see what it is to really be the church of Jesus Christ at a time when the Nazis are saying, we're going to define what is the German church. Bonhoeffer says, no, you cannot do that. And this led him finally to getting involved in the conspiracy against Hitler. Bonhoeffer officially became a member of German military intelligence when the war came. But what he was really doing was he became a double agent. He became someone who was involved at a high level in this widespread conspiracy to assassinate Hitler and to end Nazi rule in Germany. Very complicated how you get there theologically. I hope my book explains that. But
I mean, at one point he pursued the theology of pacifism, did he not?
Well, people say that it's a little bit more complicated. He was when you think of Germany following World War I, you realize that there still was this really nationalistic spirit, and Bonhoeffer stood against that. And they would have called it pacifism in those days, but it's different from our idea of pacifism, which is to say, I'll never pick up a gun in a war. Bonhoeffer would have picked up a gun to defend the fatherland, or he had this idea of just war, I think, just as many Germans at that day did. But at a time when Germany had been so nationalistic and so militaristic, he did feel that it was very important as a Christian to say, no, I've got to love my brothers and sisters in France. I've got to be not nationalistic and tribalistic, but I've got to be a Christian. And this means that to go to war is the last resort. And so in the context of that era, he was a pacifist. I think that his desire to be a part of the plot to kill Hitler and a number of other things reveal that he's not a pacifist in the way that we might think of a pacifist.
How did the fact that the in Germany at that time, I presume prior to Hitler, and certainly is today, there are essentially two established churches that receive funds from the state that are actually designated as state churches. How did that affect Bonhoeffer?
Well, that's what's so fascinating is that, you know, they didn't have the separation of church and state the way we do. And so here you have a situation where the government is paying the salaries of the pastors. And so when the Nazis took over, clearly they felt it's perfectly within their rights to sort of take over the church, to muscle out those they don't like and to put in their own pro-Nazi archbishop. And Bonhoeffer saw very quickly that, no, this cannot work, that the Church of Jesus Christ has to be independent of the state, and it has a role to not allow the state to encroach upon the church, and also to call the state to be a legitimate state, in a sense to be the conscience of the culture, the conscience of the nation. And of course, this didn't sit well with the Nazis, but ultimately it led in 1934, Bonhoeffer and a number of other pastors who were part of the Emergency Pastors League wrote something called the Barman Declaration. I quoted at length in my book just because it's such an important seminal document. But they effectively pulled away from the Nazified state church and said, no, we are independent. We are the true evangelical Lutheran church in Germany, and we want nothing to do with Hitler's state church. And it was a very dramatic thing. 6,000 pastors signed on.
This was the Confessing Church?
Yes, and they became known as the Confessing Church.
You pursue the story of Bonhoeffer as pastor, martyr, prophet, spy. Pastor seems pretty obvious. Prophet, maybe we can talk a little bit about, but I'm interested in that concept of martyr because the definition of martyr tends to apply to dying for one's faith,
right,
for one's beliefs. And he was executed essentially as for treason, I would imagine,
yes,
because he was plotting to overthrow the leader of the state.
Right. Yeah, it's very hard to say whether he was a martyr. That's not the kind of thing that you can decide definitively. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot to be said on that. Some people would say, absolutely, he did everything that he did because of his faith in Jesus, that he was a Christian all the way through. It's what shaped his thinking, every decision, and ultimately his role in the plot to kill Hitler, so that fundamentally that's why he was executed. But there's the other school of thought, just as you mentioned, that would say, no, he was a resistor, he was a political conspirator. That's why he was executed. So I don't think that there's any real answer to that question.
In what sense was Bonhoeffer a prophet?
Well, that's another one that I was so fascinated by his life. I said, this man looks when I looked at all the facts, I said, he ends up looking like an Old Testament prophet because he seems to see things that others aren't seeing. And he seems to be trying to get the people of God to see what he sees. And he was a prophetic voice on a number of levels, but in this sense, he was really trying to get the church to be the church, in the same way that in the Old Testament you have the prophets trying to get the people of God to be the people of God, not just to be a tribal group, but to be a group of people that are actually holy, that are called apart, that are hearing God's voice and obeying God in contradistinction to all of the pagan tribes around Israel. And Bonhoeffer's trying to do that for the church in the 20th century in Germany. He's saying that, listen, you all can claim to be members of the church, but God calls us to really be the church. And when evil is rising up in the form of the Nazis, we've got to discern, what does it mean to hear the voice of God? What does it mean to take action? The fact that he was what he was trying to get them to see, they really didn't see, is another reason to see him as a prophet, because in their own day, prophets are generally not taken terribly seriously. But in subsequent generations, we tend to see that what they said was, in fact, the right thing, and it's much easier for us in retrospect to say, yes, Bonhoeffer said the right thing, and we should have listened to him.
And you're defining prophet, obviously, within the traditional biblical interpretation of the meaning of prophet, rather than the facetious popular idea of somebody predicting the future.
He was no Nostradamus, if that's what you're saying, yeah. Well, I think that, again, it's that funny thing. We have different senses of what the word prophet means. But he was somebody who saw, I think on some level you could argue that he did see the future. He saw things that God had revealed to him. To some extent, there's a mystical quality to that, but I also think that sometimes people have a gift of being able to see what others don't see, and it needn't be mystical. It's just that he thought with great clarity, and I think that his father, the great scientist Karl Bonhoeffer, trained his children to think clearly, logically, to follow things through to the end, and to some extent that helped Bonhoeffer to see what others, for various reasons, were unable to see.
In what sense was Bonhoeffer a spy? I mean, I understood that he certainly opposed Hitler and his regime, but did he actually take actions to infiltrate the government and serve as a double agent in some fashion?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that, to me, is what makes the story almost unbelievable. But he escapes to America a second time. The first time he went over was 1930-31. When the war comes in 1939, he decides he's got to leave Germany. So he goes back to America. But he's praying and asking God to show him what to do. And he gets a sense that he's made a mistake. And he finally decides that God is calling him to go back to Germany to stand with his people. And so, of course, the question is, what's he going to do? In Germany, the war is coming. Bonhoeffer, of course, opposes Hitler's war. What's he going to do? Well, here's what he does. He decides to effectively be undercover. He has his brother-in-law as one of the leaders of German military intelligence. German military intelligence was itself the center of the conspiracy against Hitler. So Bonhoeffer's own brother-in-law hires Dietrich Bonhoeffer to join him, to look like he's furthering the aims of the Third Reich, member of the German military intelligence. But in fact, he was officially joining the conspiracy, and his role was to appear like he's serving the Third Reich, to appear like he's a good German. But in fact, he was going to travel to neutral countries to try to make contact with members of the Allied governments. Of course, very, very secretly, he would be killed if they found out about this, and he was killed eventually. But he wanted to he finally made contact with the English government through the Bishop of Chichester. I write about this. This was a friend of his. And tried to let the Allies know that there are Germans inside Germany working against Adolf Hitler. So it's extraordinary to think that, yes, he really became a double agent, very high stakes a game that he was playing.
In your research of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, what did you learn that surprised you or that might not otherwise be widely known?
Well, maybe the most surprising thing was to learn that he was a very serious Christian all the way to the end of his life. I think that there had been a lot of bad information out there that seemed to suggest that he'd somehow slid theologically into becoming a post-Christian humanist at the end of his life. And I was actually really startled to discover that that's not the case at all. He was a very serious Christian right until his dying day. He preached a sermon only 18 hours before going to the gallows. He held a service as a pastor for his fellow prisoners, preached from Isaiah. And there's all kinds of evidence that makes it really clear that this idea we have of Bonhoeffer sort of sliding into some kind of post-Christian humanism is simply not true. Most of it hinges around the phrase religionless Christianity, by which he really meant the opposite of what people have said. He meant that Germans Christians in Germany had been merely religious in the negative sense. In other words, they'd been going to church, going through the motions, but they hadn't really been living seriously the faith. And Bonhoeffer says, when evil comes, if we are not serious about our faith in Jesus, well, evil will win. And that's what's happened in Germany. And he said we need a religion-less Christianity, which is to say a much more serious, passionate faith. We need to be obedient disciples of Christ, not just churchgoers. Germany was a nation of churchgoers, and we see what happened. So that's, I think, a large part of how the misunderstanding about Bonhoeffer's theology came about. But that was probably the most surprising thing to me. I almost couldn't believe it.
Your book has received quite a bit of acclaim from what I understand. Who is reading it? Christians? Theologians? Is it only Christians who are reading it and learning
God,
from it?
God forbid, no. I have spoken to many Jewish groups about Bonhoeffer. I've spoken to secular groups. I'll talk to anybody about Bonhoeffer, because that's one of the reasons I think he's so compelling, is that he's a man for everybody. His relationship with the Jewish community was very important. His sister, his twin sister, to whom he was extremely close, married a Jewish man. And so Bonhoeffer saw the Nazi regime through the eyes of his brother-in-law, Gerhard, to some extent. Bonhoeffer is very complicated, and I think that there's something about him I would say, for example, if somebody's a secular person or somebody's been wary of faith or people of faith, my guess is they haven't tried Bonhoeffer, because there is something about this man, an authenticity which is undeniable and which is very compelling and ultimately very inspiring, to see that this man clearly thought through the faith. This wasn't something he did lightly. He didn't do it just because this was family believed, but he thought it through. He found it reasonable. And then he actually lived it. Here's a man who actually lived it to the point of being willing to go to his death. And I think we need stories like that. We all need stories like that. And so I think that the fact that Bonhoeffer really lived this life is, to me at least, extremely inspiring and encouraging. And I hope it will be to all kinds of people.
With all of this God talk, this Jesus talk, and so forth, why is this an appropriate topic for a lecture at a secular university?
Well, I think when you see real faith, as you do in the case of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you realize that it transcends religion. That, again, this phrase religionless Christianity, it's not merely religious. It's about living one's life in an authentic way. And I think that it's important for us to see examples of that, to say, what does that look like? What would it look like to live surrounded by this kind of evil? What should people do? Bonhoeffer, for me, presents such a fascinating model for us. But also, there's something about him that I guess because he's so complicated and has so many different sides, that he's an interesting figure from history. But maybe to answer your question, I would say that we have so many examples of negative examples of faith, examples of fanatics, examples of people who have, because of their faith, killed people and so on and so forth. And here you have an example of a man who, because of his faith, because he was serious about his faith, stood up for the Jews of Europe. I think my other biography of Wilberforce is a similar thing. Here you have a white Englishman who, because of his faith, stands up for the African slaves. I think we don't have many stories like that. And just from a historical perspective, we need to know these people existed. We don't need to agree with them. We don't need to buy their arguments. But we do need to deal with them as historical facts, as historical figures, and to sort of deepen our understanding of what does it mean to be a person of faith. These two examples, Wilberforce and Bonhoeffer, are people whose faith led them to do things that I think everyone would agree were noble. And I think just for the historical record, it's important for us to know the stories.
Without asking you to step into the political realm, we're in an election year, getting ready for a presidential election, and we were totally surrounded by it already early in the year.
Right.
What about the life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer could inform Americans during this very politicized environment? What can we learn from it that might help us in our awareness and our participation in the American system?
Well, actually many things, but I would say that the nutshell version would be that Bonhoeffer shows us that in some ways it's impossible for Christians in particular to be utterly apolitical. Somehow we live in this dirty world and we have to be at least to some extent involved in politics. But Bonhoeffer also shows us the dangers of making an idol of politics. And that's, again, what I love about him is that he shows us, you know, there's the Sylla and Charybdis, that we have to chart a narrow path, that it's one thing to say I want nothing to do with politics. Well, Bonhoeffer seems to say that you can't have that. You have to deal with politics somehow. And on the other hand, to say that politics is the answer. And Bonhoeffer says, no, politics is not the answer. God is the answer. And Bonhoeffer, it's interesting, he rebuked the Christians of his day and said, you know, if you want to be serious about your faith, you can't make Hitler a messiah, because, of course, so many Germans were foolishly doing that. And I think it's a warning to us all that no political figure on the left or the right should ever become some kind of an idol that we say that, you know, this person is the answer to all my problems. On the other hand, if we say, oh, politics is beneath me, I think Bonhoeffer shows us, no, you know, you're obliged to get involved in all kinds of things that are sort of dirty, but you can ennoble them by doing the right thing. So, as I say, I see him as a kind of model even in this case.
Eric Metaxas is the author of Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, Spy, and Chautauqua Lecturer at Eastern Kentucky University. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.